Over the years, the Covert government has always kept a few such operatives in key points of control in various institutions, to maintain the secrecy and to maintain the current order of covert management. This is true for every major country in the world, every major parliament in the world, and every major religion in the world. Academia and the scientific community are also similarly infiltrated. On the same trip, I was invited to the home of YH, an incredibly spiritual, pure-hearted woman who is the original publisher of a major New Thought book and is a very big supporter of what we're doing. Her husband, who is a former military man, knows about these things, and we've had long, interesting discussions about UFOs. One of the things that YH shared with me is that she had become friends over the years with a number of people who have been involved in these types of projects, covertly. She knew Andrea Puharich, Marcel Vogel at IBM and others who had an enormous amount of knowledge, but their knowledge was being used to empower technologies within this shadowy, covert corporate world. She knew other people who played a dual role of acquiring information and passing it up the chain of command, only to then go out to the public and spread disinformation. One such figure is a physicist dealing with zero-point energy. He told Y that he knew of actual operational free energy and zero-point energy devices, but that he is NSA and naval intelligence. After speaking with this physicist, he virtually told me that he's an intelligence operative. Yet, something that he explained to Y caused me to have an enormous amount of compassion for people in his position. At the same time, there's a certain element of revulsion. He said that he very much wanted the truth to come out and for these earth-saving new energy technologies to be put into use, but that if he talked about what he knew, he was convinced his family and children would be killed. It seems he had sold his soul to the devil in the course of his career, and yet his whole being sincerely wants the world to have these wondrous new sources of clean energy. So, he's deeply conflicted. His role has been to say, this is possible, but we don't yet have it, when, in real, itty, he knows we have these technologies but can't talk about them without risking his life and that of his family. This is a common theme. The Disclosure Project's goal is to get people who have the courage of their convictions to come together as a team, and speak the truth. There is safety in numbers and credibility in numbers. But so many of these people we reached out to, in shadowy operations, would say to me, I want the truth out, but I'd like to breathe the free air of Earth for another 30 days. Their fear was stronger than their sense of duty, and they felt that if they spoke out, they were dead men walking. I also met with Congressman Christopher Cox, currently head of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and who is on the short list of people who eventually will be running for President of the United States in the Republican Party. Harvard, educated, he's a very bright man representing Orange County, California, and was on a number of key committees. A friend and supporter of Xeti, who knows Congressman Cox, and who is an executive with IBM in Orange County, asked me to brief him. Shortly after the meeting began, Cox said, I have no doubt this is true, but I've never heard of it, and I've been on some pretty important committees. So I told him about all the folks I've met with who are out of the loop who should be in the loop and that this is a common theme. Remember, the Disclosure Project is not just disclosing things to the millions of people on the internet and CNN, but also to people like Christopher Cox, who do need to know. Sometimes these contacts and meetings happen rather mysteriously. At times I will go to a city, and lie down in my hotel room and ask, who is here that I need to speak with? I will go into a meditative state and let my awareness travel to whomever it is I should see. I will then see a specific person, and decide, I'm going to go to this particular place and ask this person to be there. And when I go to that place, there they are. I see them exactly like I saw them in my meditation. They vaguely say, you look familiar. I say, oh, yeah? And then we talk, and they always ask, well, what do you do? And I'll just flat out tell them. Invariably, they will say something like, I work with SAIC, Science App, Applications International Corporation, And you don't know how right you are? Let me tell you about what I have seen. We have received information from dozens of important intelligence sources this way. The other networks, we have to cover this kind of lurid stuff, and they pay my big paycheck. It's all about ratings, and ratings get the advertising dollars, and advertising dollars pay me my big salary. And he was just that direct about it. I said, yes, but what about journalistic integrity and editorial discretion about what's important, what is really newsworthy? Oh, come on. He said, that's out the window and has been for years. It's all about money and ratings. You don't think the big media can go any lower, until it hits another low point. It really is a race to the bottom, and they hit new lows every year. There are also covert national security filters in place to keep these big, sensitive stories out of the news. The corruption of the media is the central reason for the secrecy. In 1995, we organized the first gathering of witnesses. There were about 18 colonels and aerospace people and people from all over the United States and Russia. We gathered at Azalema, which is a retreat in Pacific Grove, California, near Monterey. Lawrence Rockefeller was very supportive of this and his people were there, as well as some of the initial witnesses. It was all videotaped and audiotaped, but the people, to whom I entrusted this task, took all the tapes and made a back-door deal with the Rockefeller group. So we don't have any of the records of that testimony. And to this day, we have not retrieved it. Sometimes people will see me being very fierce and careful about people and organizations, there's a good reason for this. That kind of theft and betrayal has happened over and over again. In late 1996/early 1997 we decided that we needed to do a formal briefing in Washington, D.C. to which we would invite government whistleblower witnesses and members of Congress and other influential political people to whom we had contacts. Prior to that briefing, Shari Adamiak, Neil Cunningham, a picture editor for the BBC in London, and I went to a lab in Phoenix run by covert operatives. One of the operatives said, you can use our digital labs to put together all the videotape for this meeting for Congress. We had collected videotape and photographic images of UFOs from all over the world. Neil Cunningham of the BBC was going to help us put together the best ever images to show. Of course, we knew who this man was and we knowingly walked right into Spook Central. I began the five protocols. I went into an expanded state of consciousness and into space and began vectoring extraterrestrial vehicles into the Phoenix area. I told the ATs, it'd be great if you can do something undeniable while we're here that we can put into this footage to share with the Congress whom we will be briefing in a couple weeks. This was on March 13, 1997, and the briefing for Congress was in early April. The laboratory is in Tempe, and while we were working the someone ran in, all excited. He said, there are enormous UFOs in the skies over Phoenix and they're being filmed. It was the Phoenix Lights. And that event was five. We landed at around 5:30, and these events were occurring around 8:30. One of the longest sightings was virtually over the lab. That night on the local news we saw footage that we could incorporate into the film summary we would then give to Congress. One evening, while we were in the lab working very late on these digital images, a retired general walked in. He was a pilot for a private contracting airline running covert ops and transporting drugs for these shadowy projects. We learned that there was a large cell of spooks conducting flight operations out of Phoenix, importing and distributing contraband drugs. This general was all coked up, he was absolutely out of his mind on drugs. As he came over, he saw some footage of a UFO that I got from a military source. He looked at it and said, how the hell did you get this? This is top secret. I looked at him and I asked, you think I'm going to tell you? Who the hell are you? He asked. I said, I'm Dr. Greer. He replied, oh, yeah, I know who you are. We were in this lab for days until the wee hours. The characters who wandered in and out were quite unbelievable, coked up agents, former Air Force and intelligence people, black ops, druggies, high-tech people, the whole nine yards, all operating out of this little obscure lab in Tempe. In the middle of this episode in Phoenix, I had to go to San Diego for one day to do a lecture. Shari and Neil stayed in Phoenix working on the tapes at the lab. While I was away, these characters tried to seduce Shari into thinking that I was the devil incarnate for trying to tell the world the truth about UFOs. She and Neil were bombarded by weird mind control and psychological warfare activity that went on for hours. Finally, she said, "I'm leaving here." And they backed off. At one point, another member of my group was in contact with this same group. They took her out to the desert and began to try to convince her to turn against what we were doing. They said, "We know everything about Dr. Greer. We know what's in his bedside table." After she told me this, I said, "You go back and tell these bastards I have no secrets from anyone I love. I have nothing that I care to hide. Tell them to do whatever they want. It won't change a thing." She flat out told them my every word. That was the end of that. They found we could not be intimidated. I mentioned earlier a gentleman, who had approached me at a lecture in Tennessee, who said he didn't know why I wasn't dead yet, and that they'd been watching what I was doing. He was a man who had personally been involved with and seen the launching of a weapons system that had targeted and destroyed an extraterrestrial vehicle. He had individual, specific knowledge of those systems. During this period between the early 90s and the late 90s, I met not one but about a dozen people who had either been at facilities who were developing these weapons systems or who were at actual events, where we had targeted and hit extraterrestrial vehicles using advanced electronics systems. Of course, the fantasy cover story for Star Wars or SDI is that there are brilliant pebbles, such as those used in the SDI program to intercept missiles and things of this sort. In reality, the real action has always been in the area of electromagnetic weapons systems and EMP weapons, electromagnetic pulse weapons, and scalar systems. When an ET craft materializes in our time, space, it is vulnerable to these advanced M weapon systems. We have top secret witnesses who have been present for the aftermath of those events, where they have retrieved or seen the crashed craft, such as Jonathan Weigand, who was on the Bolivian-Peruvian border when they cabaled down one of these ET craft in the early 1990s. We have people who have been in meetings where they were planning to do this. And we have people who have participated in the development of these weapons. One such witness who came forward was at the 1997 meeting in Washington, D.C., that we hosted for members of Congress, the White House and Pentagon officials. Congressman Dan Burton, who was chairman of the House Government Reform and Oversight Committee, was at this event, among other key people. Some of the witnesses who were coming forward were going to say things beyond what even the friendlies within this control group felt was safe. This one witness, G.A., had specific, detailed information about these rogue Star Wars plans. He had sat in on joint meetings with the NSA, CIA, NRO and some corporate programs, where he had seen these plans from the 70s on. He said they were fully operational. There was a covert ability to not only target and attack actual extraterrestrial vehicles but also to stage a false attack on Earth, using alien reproduction vehicles that are man-made and other weapons systems that were highly classified. The intent was to use stagecraft to fake an alien attack so that the people of the world would be united around Big Brother and a global corporate, military junta. It would look like the War of the Worlds. And it would surprise the National Military Command Center and most of the agencies, the CIA, the White House and the Congress, never mind the masses and the media. Just as the gullible masses have swallowed abduction stories and mutilations as proof of evil aliens, the masses would again take this Star Wars bait. I have interviewed numerous people, in classified projects, who have been on the abduction squads and have staged abductions and mutilations. G.A. was really nervous about sharing what he had been part of. He confided in me that he had been approached by people he used to work with. These were buddies that had been in really special operations, and some of them had saved each other's lives in various situations. Such groups are like a true brotherhood. They had been out of communication for a long time with each other, but knew what he was doing with the disclosure project. They certainly monitored that he was dealing with me. They begged GA to meet with them before he would say what he was going to in front of these congressmen and White House people. One of Al Gore's and Bill Clinton's best friends was at this meeting, and they knew powerful congressmen would be there. So he agreed to meet with them. The morning of the event, in April of 1997, we gathered for a private meeting of all of the assembled top secret witnesses. Astronaut Ed Mitchell was also there. Just when we were about to get to GA's testimony, we took a break. He came up to me and said he had to meet with members of this cell he had been part of, that they had surfaced and they were insisting they meet. He felt enough loyalty to them that he agreed to meet. They took him out to an undisclosed place in Virginia and held him there until about midnight, after this closed briefing for Congress was over. They then returned him to the Westin in D.C. and he slipped a note under the door of Shari Adamiak's room, who was my main assistant. In this note he said, "I really cannot talk about this now. They are begging me to say nothing about this until they can get things under control. They're going to work on it and they need some time." GA told me that, because of the disclosure project, morale within this rogue group was very low. This rogue group in charge of faking an ET attack on Earth had been exposed by us, and they were panicking. The only real power they have derives from secrecy, the element of surprise and the ignorance of others, and we were changing that dynamic by revealing their plans. Numerous people on the inside of this operation, including an NSAIC executive and a man who'd worked for years with all the major aerospace companies, have told me that what we were doing had thrown this entire so-called MJ-12 control group into chaos. We were moving major information out to the big guns in DC and to the public. There were defections occurring, and a lot of controversy, and this group that was never very homogenized was becoming more fractured, due to our work. But the insiders said to GA, "Give us some time to get this under control, and if we can't succeed, then you can talk about it." In a sense, I'm heartened that they haven't played that card yet, but I'm not convinced that it won't be played. The danger is that almost the entire world, including the majority of people who think they know what's going on with UFOs and covert programs, would be fooled. This type of effort is called a deceptive indication and warning, or a false I&W, where you set up something that looks like an attack from an enemy, but it isn't. It is a staged event designed to achieve certain strategic objectives, like the Gulf of Tonkin incident, to expand the Vietnam War and make a call for more funding and more troops. We essentially orchestrated what looked like an attack on our assets. So, I call this the Cosmic Gulf of Tonkin plan. It would take everyone by surprise. Now, the only way it won't take people by surprise is if they know the truth. And that's why I felt it was so important for GA and people like him to come forward, go on the record, name names, and talk about what the specific plan was. Carol Rose Ine was told by Wernher von Braun, when he was virtually on his deathbed, that these covert programs would attempt to put weapons in space, and would hoax extraterrestrial events and stage an attack. He warned this was a grave danger to the world. But he said one thing that I asked Carol not to talk about during the disclosure project events. Von Braun said there were electronic warfare systems that affect consciousness, that they were well developed and had the ability to affect behavior and decisions. These so-called psychotronic weapons were the greatest threat of all. Around this time, we had a retreat in Colorado. Present was a woman who had worked in a corporation that was dealing with these technologies and had personally been present when they were used. The operator could turn the dial and cause, say, a board of directors meeting to come to agreement on something within minutes, or they could turn the dial the other way and cause everyone to start fighting and descend into utter chaos. I know others who have worked with the systems, Raytheon, SAIC, and Egg and G who dealt with high-end electronics, and they also have seen versions of this same ability. Sometimes I look at the world and at some of the people that we have to work with and I'm convinced that they have been turned into zombies, because it doesn't make sense that people are behaving in certain ways, it seems almost scripted. Some scientists that have free energy technologies have been targeted with scripted belief systems and behavior patterns that have kept them from coming forward with these devices. They all seem to have the same personality quirks and behaviors, with unstable vacillations between hopefulness and paranoia. So the technologies always stay hidden, or never even get finished. We've seen this over and over and over again. These weapons systems are being used to create this behavior. It's the only thing that really explains the degree to which these technologies keep getting held up and diverted or taken off course. In the process of setting up these meetings in Washington, we became more and more aware that we were being targeted with electromagnetic weapons systems. After I was on Larry King, we went to New Mexico, near Roswell, and did this 5 project. One evening, Shari Adamiak, one other researcher, and I were out in the field doing 5 protocols. We saw some people who were obviously doing reconnaissance on us. Then suddenly, while in one of our meditative states, Shari began shaking and almost convulsing. I knew it was a seizure brought on by a directional weapons system exactly like the one that tried to extract my astral body out of the Street Maritz Hotel earlier that year. I knew what to do. Mentally I went to her and stabilized her back into her body, and neutralized the scalar system by using higher consciousness. The rogue group was attempting to do a forced astral extraction, using one of these electronic warfare systems. Shari attempted to take a long, deep breath, but was visibly shaken and frightened by the attack. Such attacks began to happen more and more, so we began our own countermeasures with people who had versions of these technologies. I would notice that there would be times when we would be gathering and there would be a pulsed wave that would come through. Literally, I would feel like I was being microwaved from the inside out. As we put protective measures in place, these events subsided. We also created a very spiritual support team to do meditation and prayer for our protection. One of the worst experiences of this was the night of the congressional briefing, in April of 97. During our presentation to the Congress, men, I suddenly felt this energy wave hit me. It almost knocked me out. There was a man there from the Pentagon who was aware of it, as well. It was so intense. Again, I felt like I was being microwaved from the inside out. I could barely maintain consciousness and thought I was going to pass out on the stage. I have to tell you that, prior to this, Colonel MK had insisted on coming to this meeting. When we said, "No, you can't come," he said point blank, in a very coarse way, "I'm going to be there anyway." And he was, if you get my drift. He is, after all, Dr. Death, and a specialist in so-called non-lethal electromagnetic warfare systems. But each time these covert interests use these systems, they tip their hand and we learn more about them. In the mid-90s, I met a man who had developed some of these systems for the agency prior to 1958. Many people think this sounds like something out of Star Trek, but by 1958, this man and his team had perfected the electronics to be able to hook people up to a device that would electronically assist them to remote view any distant place or person. He was forced to sell this invention to a front company for the agency. But at one point he asked, "Would you like to have one of these devices?" I said, "I'm not going to take that right now. I viewed it as too high risk, and we already have the ability to do remote viewing by developing our own higher awareness." Another scientist who was working in this area had developed electronics to enable people to levitate. One of our military witnesses is a colonel whose parents in the 50s were friends with some people at the RAND Corporation. They had seen people during their lunch breaks using these devices which enabled them to literally float above their desks. So, these capabilities have been around since the 50s. and look at where other technologies have gone from the 50s to now, in terms of electronics, and imagine how advanced these shadow government technologies are today. Of course, all these wondrous technologies could be used for enormously beneficial purposes, everything from healing to transportation to energy generation. Unfortunately, they are held by people who are abusing power and are addicted to the abuse of power. From that day forward, I vowed never again to okay a transaction without knowing who the players are. Because if I know who they are, I can protect them. By 1997, Shari and I knew that we were being targeted with increasingly powerful M weapons. And so it came to pass that, within a short time span, Shari, a supportive congressman, and I got metastatic cancer. I am convinced that these were electronically induced. At a subtle level of electromagnetism, you can transmute elements, and also transfer something from one place to another, and infect someone or harm someone electronically. This is a very lethal application of a science that could be used to heal people. Unfortunately, right now, the worst ill ments of humanity currently possess these technologies. When people worry about these technologies being disclosed, I say, forget about it. The worst elements already have them. Thus began a very difficult and emotional time. Following the congressional briefings in 1997, within 6 months, Shari and I both had aggressive, metastatic cancer. I had malignant melanoma, which is highly fatal when it is metastatic. So, to say that this was disturbing to me and my family is an understatement, of course. And Shari, who was the single greatest person assisting everything we were doing besides Emily, was suffering terribly from metastatic breast cancer. Here we are, two totally normal people, with no history of these cancers in either of our families. And we get them the same month. It was just too much of a coincidence to believe. Now, I can't prove what happened, except I will tell you this, the world's expert in the pathology and diagnosis of malignant melanoma looked at the one that they took off my left shoulder and said, it is metastatic. The first one was metastatic. Now, metastatic means that it originated from a primary tumor somewhere else. But I had no primary tumor anywhere else on my body or in my body. I was checked out from the back of my eye where the retina is to any, where there is a melanocyte, the type of cell that makes a malignant melanoma. And no primary was ever found. Ultimately I had to tell my dermatologist, well, we can stop looking. He asked, what do you mean? I said, I know where it came from. It came from a laboratory in Utah, where it was electromagnetically transferred onto me. And he looked at me and he asked, do you think such a thing is possible? I said, yes, I know it's possible. And I said, my right-hand assistant in the Disclosure Project has also just been diagnosed with breast cancer that is metastatic. Oh, my God, was his reply. At the time, we had a golden retriever, named Yami. He and I had always been very close. At the same time I got cancer, he got cancer of his left triceps muscle. A sarcoma. He had to have his entire left front leg taken off. When he came back from the vet, and I came back from the doctor, we had identical matching scars, to the angle of the scar and the type of staples used. To this day, I am convinced that Yami bonded to me and astrally took some of the hit from the M weapon system targeting us. I believe he saved my life. So spirit can work through nature, through a dog, whatever. To help. You can pray and meditate all you want, but if you're in downtown Hiroshima when the nuclear bomb goes off, more than likely you're going to get vaporized. And this is what happened. You can be Gandhi and you might bless the person as you go down, but the bullet will go through you and kill you. Remember, the Orwellian mindfuck term is non-lethal weapons systems. But in reality, they're quite lethal. Language is often used to hide what they're actually doing. Many insiders had told us that these covert projects were in a free fall and there was a sense of panic, that we were really getting the information out to a lot of powerful people and they were losing control. So, you can see the battle had been joined, and they lashed out. Around that time, I acquired a secret document that had a list of the code names and project names dealing with the extraterrestrial connected projects. That document is actually in the disclosure book. The day after the congressional briefings in 1997, I was asked to do a briefing for the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Tom Wilson. In advance of this important meeting, we sent a document to his people.